walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is singer-songwriter Maria McKee, who burst on the music scene about 35 years ago, fronting the band Lone Justice, and has since gone on to make a number of solo records. She's preparing, in fact, to release her first album in a decade right now. Indeed, in an interview recorded yesterday, Maria talks about the impetus and inspiration for the music on that album and a host of other topics, including feature films she's been making with her husband, Jim Aiken, who's also long been her chief musical collaborator. But the conversation was mainly about animals, primarily dogs, with more than a little time spent discussing greyhounds, including Inethonon, the black former racing greyhound she and Aiken adopted. I'll play back that conversation with Maria McKee in just a few moments here on Talking Animals. Time permitting, I'll also play a Maria McKee song that she refers to in the interview, a song she wrote about one of her dogs that's no longer with us. Later in the show, I'll speak with Don Goldstein, Talking Animals Greyhound correspondent, about legislation that would ban the use of anabolic steroids in racing greyhounds, and about proposed Amendment 67, which would gradually end greyhound racing altogether in Florida. The next step in this process takes place Friday, and Goldstein will tell us how we can reach the committee members before that meeting Friday to express how we feel about the amendment. Also, I want to take a moment to talk about the WMNF Winter Fun Drive, which starts next week. And if you're a Talking Animals fan, I'd like to urge you to make an early donation on our behalf just to help us chip away and get a running start at our no-doubt towering fundraising goal. That can be done through our tip jar. I posted a link to the tip jar on Facebook, and the first comment of the post this morning about the interview with Maria and Don, there's a picture of Maria and her greyhound in that picture, so there's the link right there to the tip jar you can click on, and love to have you just give us a little, like I say, a little head start for our fundraising goal. So that's visible both on my personal page and on the Talking Animals Radio Show Facebook page. Of course, I'll be offering some special exclusive thank you gifts for pledges at various levels made in support of Talking Animals, including a pair of amazing tickets to see Willie Nelson performing February 15th at Ruth Eckert Hall. When I went to the Ruth Eckert website a few nights ago, it indicated there were no tickets left for this show, at least online. Willie's shows there always sell out, so don't miss a chance to see him, and again, have great seats along the way to see Willie Nelson at Ruth Eckert Hall on February 15th. We're also offering a week-long stay at the Hawaiian Condo on the island of Kauai. Ocean view, it sleeps four, pretty idyllic, all kinds of cool wildlife you can see just from the balcony of the joint, much less getting out and about. And the latest Talking Animals t-shirt designed for this era of protest and resist. And also colorful animal-shaped phone stands. Do you like to prop up your phone or tablet to watch videos or Netflix or whatever? Then these phone stands might be for you. Visit TalkingAnimals.net for details, photos of all these things and more. And you can email me at Duncan@WMNF.org to find out about pledge prices and more information as well. Right now, though, let's get to this interview with Maria McKee. Recorded yesterday, this is Maria McKee on Talking Animals. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, Maria.
Thank you, Duncan.
So, of course, our focus today is dogs, and more dogs. But I should mention that later on, I do hope to discuss music with you. If I didn't do that, I'm pretty sure I'd be thrown in interviewer's jail. So, at what point did you become a dog person?
Oh, well, I mean, I've grown up with dogs. I've always loved dogs. We had them, you know, when I was small. And, you know, I had a very sad story when my parents divorced and we sold the house I grew up in. My mom took my childhood dogs to the pound, and I never saw them again. And it was really, really painful for me. So I shut down around dogs for many, many, many years. And I had a cat, and I used to say I didn't like dogs. But it was because my heart was broken, and I hadn't dealt with it. And then once I recognized that, I was able to invite dogs back into my life. And once I did, that was it. And now I'm just, you know, it's just basically me and the dogs.
Yeah. And how long was that gap from when you shut down to where you kind of reconciled those things and came back into the dog world?
What, I'm sorry?
How long was that gap from when you shut down around dogs?
It was probably, gosh, I mean, 20 years, I guess.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow, wow.
And I had a lot of different types of pets. I would, you know, when I lived in Ireland, I had rabbits, and then I had, you know, a tortoise, and I would, you know, mice, and I would try all sorts of different sort of animals that were maybe not as emotionally invested. And I finally just realized that I was just needing the companionship of a dog, and I let that energy back into my life, and I'm so glad I did.
And then when you did welcome them back into your life, and it sounds like it was sort of almost an instant magical connection, and then you've been, seems like a pretty much strong dog person ever since. What did dogs do for you, or what do they do for you now? How do they speak to you? Because it sounds like you have some sort of very strong connection to dogs.
Yeah, I really do. You know, I just think, and it's not that I don't like cats or other animals, I just find dogs to be, you know, just very open little communicable spirits. You know, they're great teachers as well.
Yeah.
The way they trust is an incredible gift. And you know, my husband and I don't have children of our own. So we just invested everything into these dogs, and they sort of, you know, it makes our home feel like a family home. And we have three now, which is quite a lot to.
There's how many there?
Sorry?
There's how many dogs you have now?
We have three.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're gonna.
We have a senior pug, a whippet who's around eight, and a Harmon who's our most recent family member, who's the greyhound.
Yeah. Well, no, we're gonna get into her one in just a moment in great detail. In some ways, this is her conversation, but just to back up, just before and after you reconnected with dogs, what sort of role did dogs play in your early days of your career? I mean, it's hard to imagine it was practical to be living with a dog, or more than one dog even, while you and the rest of, let's say, Lone Justice were barnstorming across America. So was there a period where it wasn't practical so much to live with dogs?
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't, when I was, the whole time I was working with the band, starting from when I was a teenager, no, I didn't have pets. I had, my mom and I had a rabbit for a while.
Okay.
Who stayed at home with her when I was touring, but no, I didn't have any pets in those days. And that was sort of while I was still kind of healing from the broken heart of losing my childhood dogs.
Yeah.
And not really willing to take the risk of, you know, making a connection with dogs again. I did have a horse, though.
Oh.
When I was around 18, my father had a small ranch in Sunland, and I had a retired cutting horse who was a rodeo horse. And,
wow.
We were pals, and I used to ride him. But that only lasted about a year.
But clearly we're seeing that in one way or another, even when you were sort of off dogs, you've always, sounds like, been a pretty passionate animal person of one kind or another.
Yeah, I've always had, you know, I've always been pretty connected to animals. And when I was living in Ireland full time, I had lots of rabbits.
Yeah.
I would have rabbits that would get pregnant, and then I'd have baby rabbits, and then, you know, and then I'd have another rabbit, and then, you know, there were always rabbits around. So that was kind of like the rabbit era.
Yeah. When was that era? When were you living in Ireland full time?
That was like around 88 to like 90, off and on. I lived there full time from like 88, 89 to like 91.
Okay.
And then I had a house there that I owned, and I would go back all the time. And now I still I have a base over there, but it's in London now, because my Irish family is working and commuting more in London. So we've been spending more time there instead of Ireland. Still go to Ireland. I mean, I still go to Ireland all the time.
Yeah.
But right now my base over there is in London.
Gotcha. And as one measure of your being an inveterate dog person in more recent years, I remember seeing a clip of you doing a TV interview a few years ago. I can't remember the show right now. But at the end of the interview, you were actually singing a duet.
Yes.
With
with my pug.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought the dog put in a game effort, but as a vocalist, well, maybe among the top two singers giving that performance, but still, it was very cute.
Yeah, she was
cute.
Quite special. She was quite vocal.
Yeah.
And, she actually was several times would try to talk, as some pugs do.
Yeah.
Some pugs try to speak, and they end up being able to say, I love you and stuff. And she got pretty close to being able to speak. She passed away around 12 years ago.
Oh, jeez.
So that was I actually wrote a song about her. It's on my album, I think it's late December, called My First Night Without You.
Oh.
So that was a huge grieving process.
Yeah.
And
for
sure. I find that when this is horrible, not many dog owners will do this, but when one dog passes away, I tend to get another one pretty much straight away, because it's the only way to deal with the heartache.
Interesting, yeah.
And one of the reasons I adopted an Atharman was because my current pug is experiencing some age-related issues, and her care has stepped up quite considerably, and it was breaking my heart a little bit, and so I thought bringing another dog into the house would sort of help us all cope with that transition, and it was a really good idea, because my little pug, Ooh, has some paralysis in her back legs. She can walk, but she's afraid of certain stairs. She gets stuck on the bottom two stairs, etc.
Mm.
And when she sees Enes Harmon watching her, she will have the courage to take on the stairs that she's afraid to go down. So Enes Harmon is almost having like a therapy dog effect on her, which is great.
Wow, that's really interesting. When you decided to bring another dog in with that in mind, was it clear to you that it was going to be a greyhound, or when did you first start thinking about having a greyhound be part of your life as well?
Well, you know, I've always loved, you know, sight hounds, and found them really fascinating and beautiful. And I've, you know, pretty much been a pug person, and thought that I would be, you know, ride or die pug breed only. But I find that overall, in spite of their wonderful attributes, they are kind of a cruel breed, because they are so inbred that they have so many health issues that are, I think, not comfortable for the dog. And so I've sadly decided that Ooh will be my last pug, because I think that, you know, it's I don't really know that I want to contribute to the breed anymore. I'm not to say that I wouldn't adopt one.
Yeah.
If a pug needed a home in the future. They struggle. They struggle.
Yeah.
And my husband loves the sight hound. He had an Italian greyhound. He has this whippet that is part of our family. And so when I thought about bringing another dog into the house, I was thinking possibly a whippet. But whippet rescue is not really... it's sort of... I don't think there's such thing as a whippet rescue, because whippets are really, you know, breeder dogs. So that's when I started getting into researching about, you know, what it requires to adopt a greyhound. And I admire, there's a woman that I admire who's she's a sort of what is she? She's kind of like she writes about English sort of spiritual folk art. Her name is Gemma Gary. She's based in Cornwall, and she's like a folk art, folk culture historian. And I saw a photograph of her with a big black dog, beautiful, beautiful big black dog. And I didn't really know what kind of breed it was. I was just fascinated by this breed of dog, and I wasn't sure, was it like a Doberman or like a Scottish Deerhound?
Mm.
And I discovered that it was a greyhound. And so when I initially went and contacted the Greyhound Adoption Service, I was looking for a black female.
Yeah.
Which you're not really supposed to do. They match you with a dog that is best suited to your lifestyle, etc. It's kind of against the rules a bit to kind of go in with a specific type of dog that you want, or color, or even gender. So I took a chance, and the woman that I spoke to said, well, we just happen to have a black girl who is adoptable at the moment. And so, you know, she just kept saying to me over and over again, you got lucky. It doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah.
Because they say that the grays pick their people.
Right, right.
And she was not, I wouldn't say she was a spook, because, you know, there are some greyhounds that come through the adoption service who are known as spooks. And it takes a minute for them to adapt to pet life, and they're a little bit afraid of everything. And so she's I wouldn't say she's borderline spook, but she's next door to borderline spook. She's getting really brave about a lot of things.
Okay.
It's going to take some time.
How old is she, Maria?
She's about 4.4.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
4 years, 4 months-ish.
Yeah.
She's a Virgo.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Which is great, because I'm Virgo rising, so.
And she is, I know we don't want to get too far into this, but she is a former racing dog?
Yeah, from Caliente in Mexico.
Right, yeah. That's, I guess, really the track that would feed greyhound organizations in Southern California, where I'm speaking
to
you.
I think there's four organizations that bring the dogs out from Caliente.
Yeah.
And I volunteer with one of them, and about once a month, there's a homecoming where the dogs come in, and we give them a spa day, and it's really lovely because... you get to bond with new dogs and spend time with them. They're adjusting to new environment, and it's a beautiful, beautiful experience.
Yeah, no, they're
and that's where I met my girl at one of those.
And
she was a visitor. She was a visitor on one of those dates.
And did she have her name, her distinctive name, when you met her, or is that something that you gave?
No, her name her name was Havana. And they called her Hannah.
Okay.
And it's really funny, I had the name picked out before I even had the dog.
Okay.
And, you know, it's very peculiar the way it worked out. I had thought about getting another dog, but I was open to, oddly enough, getting a cat. And the last time I was in London, I was staying with some friends of mine who had two black cats, and one of them fell in love with me, and they couldn't get over the way she wanted to hang out with me, and you know, was so affectionate and just wanted to be with me, and was really, really kind of a little bit obsessed with me.
Okay.
And I thought, you know, spiritually, I thought, wow, I wouldn't mind having a little familiar, you know, a little black cat. So I talked to my husband. I said, when I come home, I want to get a black cat. And he said, you know that I can't be in a room for more than 10 minutes without my eyes watering and my lungs closing up when I'm around a cat. And so I was a little brokenhearted. But then I thought, well, if I can adopt a dog who sort of has a feeling of a black cat.
Okay.
And, you know, that's how I ended up with my big black cat.
I see.
And I am the William Blake fanatic. I hate to use that word because he would hate that word. But anyway, my best London friend was sort of one of the founders of one of the better William Blake societies in London. And he and I sort of go on these sort of Blake pilgrimages whenever I'm there and talk about Blake and sort of, you know, kind of a sort of our Church of William Blake a bit.
Yeah.
And his sort of triple goddess in his mythology is Enna Carmen. And she's the emanation or the female portion of the Zoa, who is sort of like a mythological god sort of figure of creativity, who's the Zoa Lois. So she's the emanation of Lois. And she's a really complicated character in his poetry and mythology, and sort of based on the tonic goddess, the Anatolian tonic goddess Hecate. I guess she would sort of be Blake's Hecate. In fact, Enna Carmen's middle name is Hecate.
Wow.
So we call her Annie, and I always say for me it's sort of a, like, she's not just any girl.
Yeah, no kidding.
I call her, she's not just any girl. So she's any girl as well. And she actually comes to Enna Carmen and Annie.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I guess if she's not confused, then no one else is. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty lofty name for a dog to actually respond to and come to, but she does.
She managed
to figure it out, because I think I would give her a treat and say the name. And so she's very food-driven, and I'm lucky because that's really good for training.
Well, and also, I guess she's somewhat William Blake driven too, as it turns out.
Maybe. Yes, I'm William Blake driven.
Yeah. So.
And we're planning our first trip to London together.
Yeah. So in fact, I was going to ask you about that because I know you do regularly spend time in London, as you noted. That's kind of more your base, and then still Ireland to maybe a lesser degree than it was. So, what are some tips maybe that you could offer us about traveling internationally with one or more dogs? I mean, for you to come and go like this suggests that rules about quarantining dogs that used to be kind of a pretty burdensome and onerous for that kind of travel have changed considerably. What are the requirements now?
Well, let's just say that it would be easier for me to apply to citizenship.
Oh, yeah.
Get the documentation to get this dog over there. It's a lot of work and very timing sensitive. And, I'm a mental health advocate, so I'm open about my struggles with panic disorder and OCD and anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the perks of being under the care of a psychiatrist for over 20 years is he can write me a very lovely letter, which I can present to the airline, which will permit her to fly in cabin on Air France. So once we get to Paris, I have a friend who will pick us up from the train station in Calais. So Annie and I have to get from Paris to Calais on the train.
Okay.
And then my friend Jude, who's the William Blake scholar,
yeah,
will pick us up in Calais and drive us, get us through on the tunnel to Bloomsbury, which is where my flat in London is. So it's a lot of work.
Wow. Yeah, that's almost out of a spy movie of some kind, all the
murders.
Yeah,
it's a bit like a spy movie.
Yeah.
And, all the paperwork has to be set up in advance, and she has to have an international microchip, up-to-date rabies shots, and then because I'm kind of holistic, I hope to also arm her with a homeopathic protocol post-rabies shot so that it can sort of counteract any kind of adverse effects of the rabies. And the Greyhound people have set me up with a doctor who will provide that kit, the homeopathic kit. So, and then all the vet certificates have to be approved by the USDA. And that's part of her. And then once we're there, I can get her an EU passport. So it'll be a little bit easier. And then, of course, if we want to go to Ireland over Easter to visit my godchildren, we have to take the ferry. And again, that's another train ride to Wales.
Mm.
And ferry to Dublin.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, like you say, you have to be very committed to these trips because they are no simple things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot easier than touring with a rock band.
Right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also interesting because, I mean, I'm sure you've seen just in the last, I don't know, week or so, there's been a lot of stories about, particularly Delta, but now other airlines seem to be following suit, sort of cracking down on people who, unlike you, don't really have a legitimate claim to travel with their dog or other animal in some cases in the cabin.
Yeah,
and
I understand.
Yeah.
It's tricky because I do think people, it's quite easy to procure a letter.
Yeah.
To allow an emotional support animal access. She does have a very calming, stabilizing, and joyful effect on me. So,
And
it would be a shame if they did crack down on those laws.
Well,
because it would affect people who actually do benefit from having an emotional support animal.
Right. Well, and I think the crackdown is only to crack down on the people that are not in your situation. I mean, again, it sounds like a psychiatrist writes you a letter and there's reasons for it and there has been for a number of years. So to me, that's quite different than a lot of people who just say, hey, wouldn't it be great to have Rover up in the cabin with
yeah.
me and or not pay the fee that I would otherwise pay if this wasn't considered an emotional support dog or whatever. So
yeah.
To me, the crackdown is more about people that are sort of gaming the system rather than legitimate purposes like your own.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the rules should be should be quite strict. I don't know if there's a way. I mean, I know a lot of the letters, the template for the letter that I will give to my psychiatrist is pretty detailed. It includes the number of years that I've been under his care and et cetera.
Yeah.
He's a very prominent doctor.
Yeah.
One of the leading, doctors in his field. So it should which should suffice, you know, but, you know, it's, I think dogs should be allowed everywhere. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well,
I think, like my husband said, when we were printing out all the documents to get the dog, you know, cleared medically and everything, he said, what, you know, they should make it this hard for people to get into another country, not dogs.
There you go. They've got it.
They should crack down on people coming and going.
Yeah. They've got it backwards. Yeah, for sure.
I know.
Yeah. So your travels, especially on occasion more recently to Ireland, less, I guess, than to London, but calls to mind a rare performance you gave, I guess, about a year ago at St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin.
Yes, and, yes, that was a wonderful night.
Yeah, I mean, as one-offs go, this seemed pretty special. How did that come about?
Yeah, they just contacted me about this festival, and you know, it's so funny. When I'm between albums and I don't really have a reason to tour, I just get sort of random offers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if one looks really enticing, I will take it. And you know, like I say, Ireland is a second home to me. So it was a hometown gig, and my family was there. And, you know, and it was a really nice, it was a prestigious festival. And, of course, in a historical venue. So it was really one of the fondest nights of my life. I mean, I had an amazing time that night. It was a beautiful gig.
Yeah.
You know, just fans came from all over Europe, and it was sold out. My recollection, and you know, really just the way I like it, just pin drop silence with intermittent sobs.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and luckily there are I guess a handful of YouTube clips from that performance, and yeah, it just seems like you're having a lot of fun, and the sound is great, and people seem to be
it was a great night.
Yeah. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Maria McKee, the singer-songwriter, dog devotee, where we've been talking about greyhounds. Now we're talking a little bit more about music and in a conversation that was recorded Tuesday, as in yesterday. So now, I guess, as you say, you haven't really been touring that much, but I'm guessing those performances may become less rare, as I believe you're gearing up to release a new album after, I guess, the better part of a decade without having done so.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing these soundtracks with my husband for his films, but I haven't actually written an entire song cycle, like, you know, a conceptual sort of song cycle like this since my album High Dive, which was, I think, released in 2004, so
yeah.
It's been a really long time. You know, I made a couple albums after that, but they were sort of, they were more kind of collaborative. My husband and I were writing together, and then also kind of, those albums did include sort of archival stuff, you know, songs that I had lying around, and they were sort of cobbled together. Whereas this one is really, you know, I sat down and wrote an album from start to finish, and I hadn't done that. I think, really, I hadn't done anything like that since Life is Sweet, and that was 25 years ago. So,
wow.
It's a big deal for me. When I was in London last, I worked with Eric Gorfain, and we did a string session with a 13-piece orchestra. So it's kind of an orchestral pop record.
Wow.
And, you know, hope to release it spring, summer. We're releasing it into a world where there doesn't appear to be a music business anymore.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a little bit about that, just how you plan to release it, and was there going to be some sort of tour, or
I will do some gigs, certainly. I will. I still have a really great agent in London at CAA, and, you know, we will set up some shows, probably mostly over there.
Yeah.
Maybe one in New York, maybe one in LA. You know, as far as I think there's like streaming to be had. So mm-hmm. I imagine maybe meeting with some people who facilitate some sort of streaming. I think that's the way it's done now. And other than that, just directly to the fans.
And to release a record after such a long gap, as you've said, might suggest, I mean, there's a number of reasons, I'm sure, but also might suggest a songwriter who's really kind of taking stock or waiting till there's something maybe different to say in those songs. I mean,
album kind of caught me by this, you know, took me by the throat and wouldn't let me go. And the songs had to be written. And I've kind of always worked like that. Like I said, the albums I sort of put out in the interim between High Dive, Life is Sweet, High Dive, and this one, were more sort of like, oh, it's time to make an album. Let me go through my old songs. Let me write some stuff with my husband and we'll cobble something together. Not that I didn't put a lot of energy and love into those records, but it's a different type of process. This process for me was like, I have something to say. It's burning a hole in my chest. I have to get it out. And, it's got me.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it didn't let go until it was done.
So that had to be released, so to speak, from within you and whatever muse or other things that were saying, hey, time for me to get onto a record and get out there.
Yeah. And also, you know, we've been working on these films. And my husband and I just completed one that he wrote for me to star in. And it was extraordinarily challenging. It's a very, 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 very dark character. I mean, there's some humor, there's some black humor, but it sort of took me through hell, and the character kind of got under my skin and was hard to shake. She kind of started writing this record.
Okay. What is the name of that film?
The film is called Beauty, Majesty, and Terror.
Mm-hmm. Because that's, I think the third maybe one that you and your husband have.
Yeah, it's the third feature film.
Yeah. It sounds like this was kind of a transcendent experience, though, because, I mean, you've done some work, I think, on these films behind the scenes, but in front of the camera. But this sounds like, I haven't unfortunately seen the film yet, which I hope to. But.
Yeah, I mean, I had sort of, you know, I was part of his acting ensemble on the other films, and I had pivotal roles, but they weren't huge roles. And this one is, you know, I'm on screen about 99% of the time, and the character is, like I said, extraordinarily demanding. It's heavy, very heavy, very dark.
And so, do you think
it's an amazing character? She's iconic. I mean, she's mythological. She's larger than life, but extremely tortured. And
then it sounds like, in some ways, even though that there was other things going on inspiring you to write music again, but it sounds like this character was in some way an additional catalyst for the new record.
I'm sorry, you're sort of fading away there?
Yeah, no, it sounded like that while you otherwise were getting more and more inspired to write a new record anyway, it sounds like from your description that this character in this film also served as kind of a real catalyst for creating the new music.
I hadn't planned to make another record. I thought we would just do a soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
And maybe I would write some songs sort of, you know, for the film. But once I finished filming and I did the gig, well, several things happened. I finished filming. I thought the character was behind me. I thought we were done and dusted. And then the election happened, which shook me to my core, and I became apoplectic and nearly ended up in the nervous hospital. Mm. And then I did that gig, my first real gig in several years. It opened up something, sort of a channel. Mm. And when I'm quite planet sensitive, so I was flying home during the lunar eclipse around February 10th of last year. And it was sort of the it set off a bunch of eclipses and sort of in and around my house, including the one that's happening. when is this airing? Tomorrow?
With the blue moon?
The one that's happening tomorrow.
Yeah.
In my house of Leo. When I arrived back home after my last trip, I was I felt as if I'd been walked in, which is sort of a new age term for kind of being almost replaced by an outside sort of entity or force spiritually. And I was sort of like, who is this person? And then that person started writing all these songs. It was a dark night of the soul, and I came through it, and I had a beautiful album.
Wow. Well, this sounds like it's going to be...
It's my favorite one to do.
Yeah. And again, you say spring, summer, thereabouts for this?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And the film as well. So.
Okay.
It's a busy year for me.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And,
life begins at 50, Duncan.
What's that?
Life begins at 50.
Okay. Well, in that case, my life began some years ago, too. But, it's only getting better. Now, in a way, that kind of weirdly reminds me, you know, I've tried not to ask too many Lone Justice things, but partly for that very reason, in terms of all the things that have happened since. I don't know how often you reflect on the whole Lone Justice days, but does it now seem like something that almost happened to someone else, or is it all just part of a big arc of your life that's kind of ultimately presented to you at the point you are now?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. When I started writing this record, I was looking back quite a bit, you know, because it does have, this record has an air of almost like Death in Venice.
Yeah.
It's sort of like having a glimpse of youth and beauty and sort of seeing yourself reflected back and kind of almost, you know, the sort of unrequited love poetry sort of to youth and beauty and your younger self and your past. And so I found myself kind of pouring over some of the older videos and sort of kind of investigating almost the main key of my youth and how this sort of experience of being in that band affected me. And, how my adolescence was so unique in so many ways and how it shaped who I am now. And so I kind of accepted a lot of it. But I mean, it's odd because stylistically and musically, I find that whatever occurred with that first Lone Justice album has very little to do with the music I make now, apart from the fact that it was sort of ahead of its time and kind of hard to categorize at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I still feel a little bit like I'm always a little bit outside, and maybe at risk of sounding arrogant, maybe a few steps ahead, and therefore sort of it's been hard for me to find a place commercially. And the films are the same, really, really outside of categorization, and because of that a little bit hard to, you know, to find the audience.
Yeah, it was at the time seemed like a very complicated rock and roll music biz, artistic, every kind of thing story, just because for some of the reasons you've just detailed, that there was huge expectations, which was its own perhaps mixed bag, but I think it was hard to sort of fit Lone Justice into something, and which was what it's part of its charm and beauties, and but also why all those expectations were almost always going to be impossible to meet. But that's interesting that some reflecting back on that is some of what fuels this this new record. So all the more eager to hear that. So, well, cool, Maria. We've just about reached the end of our time, but thank you very, very much for making the time to join us on Talking Animals and talk about greyhounds, dogs, music, and films, and all kinds of other cool stuff. And we'll keep an eye out for the new record and hopefully at least a few concerts here and there, if not an actual tour.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you, Duncan. It was fun.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay.
My thanks again to Maria McKee. I'm hoping, looking forward to the new album and looking forward to seeing that film based on the description of her her character. Yikes. I'm also hoping there'll be time to hear my First Night Without You, the song that she mentioned that she wrote for her departed pug. I really should hear some of her music and therefore some of her extraordinary singing before we finish our time here today, so let's hope that works out. Meanwhile, in a few moments, I'll speak with Greyhound correspondent Don Goldstein about important pending Greyhound legislation and the Next Step Friday that could advance proposed Amendment 67, which could yield the end of Greyhound racing in Florida overall. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner, and if it was incumbent on me to do something dog-related, why not a favorite comic with a favorite piece? It's Brian Regan, with a bit called Dog Barking in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Why would a dog bark at 3 o'clock in the morning in your neighborhood? What is that all about? I'm not talking about when there's two dogs doing, you know, whatever they do. Sometimes you got two going at it, you know. Hey! Do you remember when we were chasing that cat? Yeah. You got him mixed up with a stick. Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that. That was fun. Yeah.
I'm not talking about that. That's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about when there's one dog, you know, doing a monologue like at 3 o'clock in the morning. What are they doing? I think they just go out on the porch at that hour and just go, hey, it's nice and quiet.
Why don't I bark it up for no reason whatsoever? Home, 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 home. And then right when you think they're done, home, 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 home. What the hell's the matter with you? I'm a dog. Barking. How do you argue with them? Wouldn't it be weird if people were like that for no reason? Like if some guy went out on his porch at 3 in the morning, nobody knows him. He's like new to the neighborhood, just goes out there, you know, hey! 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 Hey, you all right, man? Hey, hey, hey! Well, hey, that's it for me. Thank you all very much, folks.
That was Brian Regan with a piece called Dog Barking, taken from his album simply entitled Live. So we've had various technical challenges today here at the station. And at the moment, was unable to dial out to reach Don Goldstein. So, getting some help on that right now. And we'll hope to connect with him in a moment. What I'm going to do in the meantime, though, is play the Marie McKee song that I had mentioned that we would try to include. So, we're going to do that right now, and then with any luck, we'll solve our phone problems and come back with Don Goldstein after that. So this is Maria McKee with My First Night Without You, Talking Animals.
I've put your things away, all the things that you left me behind. So lost throughout the day, numb the body you've left me behind. How many times in one day will my gut feel the tearing away on my first night? Shock still a dream, it's killing me. My first night without you, ebbing out, ebbing in, the agony of breathing without you. I've locked my heart away, just a day, just to get through a day. My first night with still a dream, it's killing me.
My first night without you.
Ebbing out, ebbing in, the agony of breathing without you. La 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 la.
My first night without you.
La la la.
All right, that was Maria McKee with My First Night Without You. Nice tribute to her departed pug. So, unfortunately, we are having phone difficulties here at WMNF. Tried to reach Don a number of times, and we can get him on a cell, but we can't get him on the station phone line. So, then we asked him to call in, but apparently that doesn't work either. So we're gonna hope something breaks through here and carry on with other parts of the show, I guess. I will tell you what he was gonna talk about, and I'm still hoping he will, because he is our Greyhound correspondent for good reason and knows this stuff thoroughly. But we're gonna talk about House Bill 463 and Senate Bill 674, which would ban the use of anabolic steroids in racing greyhounds. And those are used currently to keep the females from coming into season, I guess is one phrase. And but the upshot is, as we've talked about, I think, at least once or twice with Don in the past, is that over time, at least some of the dogs are significantly affected by that, and they can develop the other kind of genitalia or versions of it from the anabolic steroids, and there's other issues too for their health. So these bills have advanced, both the House and the Senate bill, but not yet on the agenda. So again, we'll hope to find out more from Don about that if we do speak to him today, and if not, soon, hopefully. And the other thing he was going to talk about, which kind of more timely almost in some ways, is the proposed Amendment 67, which we did talk about with Don, I think, in November, when Senator Bill Lee, or Tom Lee, I'm sorry, had proposed this amendment, this constitutional amendment, that over time, if it passed all the hurdles, would effectively end greyhound racing over 3 years' time in Florida. And so far it has advanced through the various steps of the process, and the Executive Committee of the General Provisions, I guess it's the Constitutional Committee, is going to be hearing it this Friday. So one of the things we were going to speak with Don about was urging folks who care about these things, care about greyhounds, to contact members of the Executive Committee to register your concern for that constitutional amendment advancing, and ultimately saying goodbye to greyhound racing altogether. So do not have that information at hand, because Don was going to provide that. So hopefully a quick search could turn that up. One of the reasons we were going to speak today is so that there would be a couple of days between now and the meeting on Friday for folks to reach the members of the Executive Committee. So anyway, so that's what we had in mind, but that's without all of Don's great expertise, I'm afraid. So very sorry about this. Some kind of ghost in the machine on our phone lines. I've been having everywhere I go, including multiple things at my house and with the Talk Animals website and email and recording equipment, phone call, obviously, with Marie McKee. So it's I'm having a rough go. So anyway, all right, so let's move on to Name That Animal Tune. Coming up at 11 on WMF, it is Rob Loy and Radioactivity, kicking up a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including the noon hour midpoint with Nola Lillet. Then at 1 p.m., John Gilmore presides over executive session. And then the music kicks back in at 2 p.m. with Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music. So, but right now, let's get to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. Please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days, and there'll be a prize. The newest edition of the Talking Animals t-shirt to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
There's a crow flying, talking ragged tree to tree. He's black as the highway that's leading me. Now he's diving down to pick up on something shiny. I feel like that black crow flying in a blue sky. I took the ferry to the highway, then I drove to a pontoon plane. I took a plane to a taxi, and a taxi to a train. I've been traveling so long.
Okay, I think through the wizardry of our operations manager DT and Skype, I think we do have Don now. Don, do you hear me?
I've got you.
Oh, great. Geez. Well, just in the nick of time. I'm sorry it's so abbreviated, but we just, again, bedeviled here with our phone system. But in our, unfortunately, extremely limited time now, why don't you run us through? I did sort of try to summarize ineffectively compared to you what we were going to talk about, but why don't you hit whatever you want about the anabolic steroid bills and then especially also about proposed Amendment 67.
The steroid bills are through both of them are in both House and Senate through their first committee. The Senate Bill 674, which is by Dana Young, Senator Dana Young from Tampa, that will be up on the Commerce Committee, we believe, next Wednesday, a week from today. That's their, I'm sorry, the Agricultural Committee. The House Bill 463 by Representative Young, or excuse me, Representative Smith from Orlando, will be up on the Commerce Committee, and we're not sure exactly. That has not been agended yet. But we'll keep people advised on that, and they can follow those bills just by going to myfloridahouse.gov or floridasenate.flsenate.gov. Proposed Amendment 67 by State Senator Tom Lee from the Brandon-Sefner area, that is going to be heard, as you mentioned, on air by the Executive Committee Friday afternoon in Tallahassee. In fact, I'll be going up to Tallahassee for that hearing. If people are interested in this, they can go to FLCRC, that stands for Florida Constitution Revision Commission, FLCRC.gov. They can go to the Committees tab and go down to the Executive Committee, and then they will have a link to all nine members of that committee, all nine commissioners that are on that committee. And there's a hot link to each one of them. They can express their opinion on this measure. The measure itself would very quickly, if it goes through this committee, it will go to the full commission. It will be considered by all 37 commissioners. If 22 of the commissioners approve that between now and the first part
Don,
of May.
Don, I apologize. We got about 2 seconds left, and I got to sign off, so I'm so sorry. But hopefully.
No problem, Duncan.
All right. This is Don Goldstein. Thank you. It's Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. So sorry for everything. NPR News is up next.